Gerusalemme Liberata by Torquato Tasso, 1581, translated by Edward Fairfax in 1600. The 16th Book. The searchers pass through all the palace bright, where in sweet prison lies Rinaldo pent, and do so much that full of rage and spite, with them he goes, sad, shamed, discontent. With plaints and prayers to retain her knight, Armida strives, he hears, but thence he went. And she, forlorn, her palace great and fair, destroys for grief, and flies thence through the air. The palace great is builded rich and round, and in the center of the inmost hold, there lies a garden sweet, on fertile ground, fairer than that where grew the trees of gold. The cunning sprites had buildings reared around, with doors and entries false a thousandfold. A labyrinth they made that fortress brave, like Daedal's prison or Porsena's grave. The knights passed through the castle's largest gate, though round about 100 ports there shine. The door leaves framed of carved silver plate, upon their golden hinges turn and twine. They stayed to view this work of wit and state. The workmanship excelled the substance fine, for all the shapes in that rich metal wrought, save speech, of living bodies wanted not. Alcides there sat telling tales and spun among the feeble troops of damsels mild, he that the fiery gates of hell had won and heaven upheld. False love stood by and smiled. Armed with his club, fair Iola forth run, his club with blood of monsters foul defiled, and on her back his lion skin had she, too rough a bark for such a tender tree. Beyond was made a sea, whose azure flood the hoary froth crushed from the surges blue, wherein two navies great, well ranged stood, of warlike ships, fire from their arms outflew. The waters burned about their vessels good, such flames the gold therein enchased through. Caesar, his Romans hence, the Asian kings, thence Antony and Indian princes brings. The Cyclades seemed to swim amid the main, and hill gainst hill, and mount gainst mountain smote, with such great fury met those armies twain. Here burnt a ship, there sunk a bark or boat. Here darts and wildfire flew, there drowned or slain, of princes dead, the bodies fleet and float. Here Caesar wins, and yonder conquered been the eastern ships, there fled the Egyptian queen. Antonius eke himself to flight betook, the empire lost to which he would aspire. Yet fled not he, nor fight for fear forsook, but followed her, drawn on by fond desire. Well might you see within his troubled look, strive and contend, love, courage, shame, and ire. Oft looked he back, oft gazed he on the fight, but oftener on his mistress and her flight. Then in the secret creeks of fruitful Nile, cast in her lap, he would sad death await, and in the pleasure of her lovely smile sweeten the bitter stroke of cursed fate. All this did art with curious hand compile in the rich metal of that princely gate. The knights these stories viewed first and last, which seen, they forward pressed, and in they passed. As through his channel crooked meander glides, which with turns and twines and rolls now to, now fro, whose streams run forth there to the salt sea sides, here back return and to their springward go. Such crooked paths, such ways this palace hides, yet all the maze their map described so, that through the labyrinth they got in fine, as Theseus did by Ariadne's line. When they had passed all those troubled ways, The garden sweet spread forth her green to show. The moving crystal from the fountains plays, fair trees, high plants, strange herbs and flowerets new. Sunshiny hills, dales hid from Phoebus' rays, groves, arbors, mossy caves, at once they view. And that which beauty most wonder brought, nowhere appeared the art which all this wrought. So with the rude, the polished mingled was, that natural seemed all and every part. Nature would craft in counterfeiting pass, and imitate her imitator art. Mild was the air, the skies were clear as glass, the trees no whirlwind felt, nor tempest smart. But ere the fruit drop off, the blossom comes. This springs, that falls, that ripeneth, and this blooms. The leaves upon the selfsame bough did hide, beside the young, the old and ripened fig. Here fruit was green, there ripe with vermeil side. The apples new and old grew on one twig. The fruitful vine her arms spread high and wide, that bended underneath their clusters big. The grapes were tender here hard, young and sour, there purple ripe, and nectar sweet forth pour. The joyous birds, hid under greenwood shade, sung merry notes on every branch and bough. The wind that in the leaves and waters played with murmur sweet, now sung and whistled now. Ceased the birds, the wind loud answer made, and while they sung, it rumbled soft and low. Thus were it hap or cunning, chance or art, the wind in this strange music bore his part. With party-colored plumes and purple bill, a wondrous bird among the rest there flew, that in plain speech sung love lays loud and shrill. Her leaden was like human language true. So much she talked, and with such wit and skill, that strange it seemed how much good she knew. Her feathered fellows all stood hushed to hear. Dumb was the wind, the waters silent were.
"The gently budding rose," quoth she, "behold, that first scant peeping forth with virgin beams, half ope, half shut, her beauties doth upfold in their dear leaves, and less seen, fairer seems. And after spreads them forth more broad and bold than languishes and dies in last extremes. Nor seems the same that decked bed and bower of many a lady late and power mower. So in the passing of a day doth pass the bud and blossom of the life of man, nor e'er doth flourish more, but like the grass cut down becometh withered, pale and wan. O gather then the rose, while time thou hast. Short is the day, done when it scant began. Gather the rose of love, while yet thou mayest. Loving, be loved, embracing, be embraced."
He ceased, and as approving all he spoke, the choir of birds their heavenly tunes renew. The turtles sighed, and sighs with kisses broke. The fowls to shades unseen by pairs withdrew. It seemed the laurel chaste and stubborn oak, and all the gentle trees on earth that grew. It seemed the land, the sea, and heaven above, all breathed out fancy sweet, and sighed out love. Through all this music rare, and strong consent of strange allurements, sweet above mean and measure, severe, firm, constant, still the knights forth went, hardening their hearts against false enticing pleasure. Twixt leaf and leaf their sight before they sent, and after crept themselves at ease and leisure, till they beheld the queen set with their knight besides the lake, shaded from with boughs from sight. Her breasts were naked, for the day was hot. Her locks unbound waved in the wanton wind. Some deal she sweat, tired with the game, you wot. Her sweat drops bright, white, round, like pearls of Ind. Her humid eyes a fiery smile forth shot, that like sunbeams in silver fountains shined. O'er him her looks she hung, and her soft breast the pillow was where he and love took rest. His hungry eyes upon her face he fed, and feeding them so, pined himself away. And she, declining often down her head, his lips, his cheeks, his eyes kissed as he lay, wherewith he sighed, as if his soul had fled from his frail breast to hers, and there would stay with her beloved sprite. The armed pair these follies all beheld, and this hot fare. Down by the lover's side their pendant was a crystal mirror, bright, pure, smooth, and neat. He rose, and to his mistress held the glass, a noble page, graced with that service great. She, with glad looks, he with inflamed, alas, beauty and love beheld, both in one seat. Yet them in sundry objects each espies, she in the glass, he saw them in her eyes. Her to command, to serve, it pleased the knight. He, proud of bondage, of her empire she. "My dear," he said, "that blesseth with the sight, even blessed angels, turn thine eyes to me, for painted in my heart and portrayed right, thy worth, thy beauties and perfections be, of which the form, the shape and fashion best, not in this glass is seen, but in my breast. And if thou me disdain, yet be content, at least so to behold thy lovely hue, that while thereon thy looks are fixed and bent, thy happy eyes themselves may see in view. So rare a shape no crystal can present, no glass contain that heaven of beauties true. Oh, let the skies thy worthy mirror be, and in dear stars thy shape and image see." And with that word she smiled, and ne'ertheless her love toys still she used, and pleasures bold. Her hair, that done, she twisted up in tress, and looser locks in silken laces rolled. Her curlous garland wise she did up dress, wherein, like rich enamel laid on gold, the twisted flowers smiled, and her white breast the lilies there that spring with roses dressed. The jolly peacock spreads not half so fair the eyed feathers of his pompous train, nor golden iris so bends in the air her 20-colored bow through clouds of rain. Yet all her ornaments, strange, rich, and rare, her girdle did in price and beauty stain, nor that, with scorn, which Tuscan Gila lost, nor Venus' sestin could match this for cost. Of mild Danae's, of tender scorns, of sweet repulses, war, peace, hope, despair, joy, fear, of smiles, jests, mirth, woe, grief, and sad regret, sighs, sorrows, tears, embracements, kisses dear, that mixed first by weight and measure meet, then at an easy fire attempered were, this wondrous girdle did Armida frame, and when she would be loved, wore the same. But when her wooing fit was brought to end, she congee took, kissed him, and went her way. For once she used every day to wend about her affairs, her spells and charms to say. The youth remained, yet had no power to bend one step from thence, but used there to stray amongst the sweet birds, through every walk and grove, alone, save for a hermit false called Love. And when the silence deep and friendly shade recalled the lovers to their wonted sport, in a fair room for pleasure built they laid, and longest nights with joys made sweet and short. Now while the queen her household things surveyed, and left her lord her garden and disport, the twain that hidden in the bushes were, before the prince in glistering arms appear. As the fierce steed, for age withdrawn from war, wherein the glorious beast had always won, that in vile rest from fight sequestered far, feeds with the mares at large, his service done. If arms he sees, or hear the trumpets jar, he neigheth loud, and thither fast doth run, and wiseth on his back the armed knight, longing for jousts, for tournament and fight. So fared Rinaldo when the glorious light of their bright harness glistered in his eyes. His noble sprite awaked at that sight, his blood began to warm, his heart to rise. Though drunk with ease, devoid of wonted might, on sleep till then his weakened virtue lies. Ubaldo forward stepped, and to him healed, of diamonds clear, that pure and precious shield. Upon the targe his looks amazed he bent, and therein all his wanton habit spied. His civet, balm, and perfumes redolent, how from his locks they smoked, and mantle wide, his sword, that many a pagan stout had shent, bewrapped with flowers, hung idly by his side, so nicely decked that it seemed the knight wore it for fashion's sake, but not for fight. As when from sleep and idle dreams abraid, a man awaked calls home his wits again, so in beholding his attire he played, but yet to view himself could not sustain. His looks he downward cast, and naught he said. Grieved, shamed, sad, he would have died fain, and oft he wished that the earth or ocean wide would swallow him, and so his errors hide. Ubaldo took the time, and thus begun. All Europe now, and Asia, be at war, and all that Christ adore and fame have won, in battle strong, in Syria fighting are. But thee alone, Bertoldo's noble son, this little corner keeps, exiled far from all the world, buried in sloth and shame, a carpet champion for a wanton dame. What lethargy hath in drowsiness upenned thy courage thus? What sloth doth thee infect? Up, up our camp, and Godfrey for thee send! Thee fortune praise and victory expect! Come, fatal champion, bring to happy end this enterprise begun, all that sect which oft thou shaken hast to earth full low, with thy sharp brand strike down, kill, overthrow. This said, the noble infant stood a space, confused, speechless, senseless, ill-ashamed. But when that shame to just disdain gave place, to fierce disdain, from courage sprung untamed, another redness blushed through his face, whence worthy anger shone, displeasure flamed. His nice attire in scorn he rent and tore, for of his bondage vile that witness bore. That done, he hasted from the charmed fort, and through the maze passed with his searchers twain. Armida of her mount and chiefest port wondered to find the furious keeper slain. A while she feared, but she knew, in short, that her dear lord was fled. Then saw she plain. Ah, woeful sight! How from her gates the man, in haste, in fear, in wrath, in anger ran! "Whither, O cruel, leavest thou me alone?" she would have cried. Her grief her speeches stayed, so that her woeful words are backward gone, and in her heart a bitter echo made. Poor soul, of greater skill than she was one, whose knowledge from her thus her joy conveyed. This wist she well, yet had desire to prove, if art could keep, if charms recall her love. All what the witches of Thessalia land, with lips unpure, yet ever said or spake, words that could make heaven's rolling circles stand and draw the damned ghosts from Limbo Lake. Ah, well she knew, but yet no time she fanned to use her knowledge or her charms to make, but left her arts, and forth she ran to prove if single beauty were best charm for love. She ran, nor of her honour took regard. Oh, where be all her vaunts and triumphs now? Love's empire great, of late, she made or barred. To her his subjects humbly bend and bow, and with her pride mixed was a scorn so hard that to be loved she loved, yet whilst they woo, her lovers all she hates. That pleased her will to conquer men, and conquered so to kill. But now herself disdained, abandoned, ran after him that from her fled in scorn, and her despised beauty labored with humble plaints and prayers to adorn. She ran and hasted after him that fled, through frost and snow, through briar, bush, and thorn, and sent her cries on message her before, that reached not him till he had reached the shore. "O thou that leav'st but half behind," quoth she, "of my poor heart, and half with thee doth carry, O, take this part, or render that to me, else kill them both at once. Ah, tarry, tarry, hear my last words. No parting kiss of thee I crave, for some more fit with thee to marry. Keep them unkind. What fear'st thou if thou stay? Thou mayst deny as well as run away." At this Rinaldo stopped, stood still, and stayed. She came, sad, breathless, weary, faint and weak. So woebegone was never nymph or maid, and yet her beauty's pride grief could not break. On him she looked, she gazed, but naught she said. She would not, could not, or she durst not speak. At her he looked not, glanced not. If he did, those glances shamefaced were, close, secret, hid. End of part 1 of the 16th book.